Welcome to the Recruiting Rant Podcast. I'm your host, Gerard Martinez, senior analyst for USCFootball.com. USC still at the top of the headlines in recruiting, garnering three verbal commitments last week. As we reported on the Recruiting Rant Podcast, Miller Moss, the 6'2", 195-pound four-star quarterback, formerly of Bishop Alemany High School, committed to USC. News leaked Monday that Moss will be transferring to Modern Day and playing his senior season with the Monarchs. Certainly an interesting move that will have recruiting implications for USC, as Moss has a relationship with several Alemany players now transferring to Modern Day, which has several USC recruiting targets. Joining Moss in the USC class of 2021 last week were Las Vegas three-star wide receiver Michael Jackson III and Austin, Texas three-star tight end Lake McCree. The Trojans now rank number four nationally in recruiting with 16 commitments in the 2021 class. With that said, let's jump into the abyss of recruiting questions that we have this week. The first one comes from the Chubby St. Cloud, who says, "Hi, GM. You're one of the best out there, and I look forward to this every week." Well, thank you very much. How did you get into all of this? Well, once upon a time, there was a publisher named Ryan Abraham who had Wi-Fi issues. No, I'm just kidding. That's how this podcast got started. How I got started in the recruiting publication industry, I was finishing up my bachelor's degree in broadcast communications, posting on various message boards, including being a moderator on the student sports message board. A poster by the name of Domer BG4, some of you OG, old school Peristyle members know who that is. He happened upon some of my posts about high school football and informed Ryan Abraham, the publisher of USCFootball.com, that I might be able to contribute some recruiting content for the site. So Ryan reached out to me and asked me to put together a list of potential prospects and targets that USC would be recruiting for that year. That turned out to be the first target list. But instead of just making a list of players, their heights, and their high school, I made an entire HTML document out of it, color coding it and formatting it in HTML code. Ryan liked it, and the rest is history. Hot Pie comes in with our next question. Hot Pie coming through. Hot Pie in the thread. How is it with two top quarterbacks committed in this class, SC can't get the best wide receivers in the state? What's your personal ranking of these receivers? Quadarius Davis, who's committed to USC out of Dallas Skyline High School. Michael Jackson, who's committed to USC out of Las Vegas Desert Pines High School. Xavier Worthy, Troy Franklin, and Emeka Egbuka. For me, Egbuka is number one far and away on that list. There's really not a close second to him. The speed, the explosiveness, the size, and the strength. There's really not another wide receiver that I've seen in the region that comes close to him. And really nationally, I think he's one of the few wide receivers in recent years that has been number one without much debate. I might put Xavier Worthy number two on that list if it wasn't for two things. Number one, grades. Number two, the fact that skill players out of Fresno have a bad track record of being complete busts in college. So I think I'd give Troy Franklin the nod over Worthy, but it's pretty close. And pretty close also is number three, which would be Quadarius Davis. I think Quadarius Davis, extremely explosive. He's strong. He offers some of what Emeka Egbuka does, but perhaps just not the time speed. He doesn't have the verified stats that Egbuka does. And to be fair, he doesn't have the same level of junior film that Egbuka does either. But you know, out of that group, I would have to say that Troy Franklin is the one that I'm probably the most suspicious of athletically. It's the Bay Area, and Menlo Atherton, the few good football programs that they faced last year, they got blown out by. Now, that's not totally on Franklin. He had a decent game against San Mateo Serra, had nine catches for 58 yards, was held in check by Folsom. Then he had three catches for like 50 yards. But I think more than statistics, my issue is watching him. I see a little bit of Tyler Vaughns in his game. I think I compared him to Marvin Jones, the ex-Cal receiver, but there's also that sort of methodical, smooth nature in how he catches the ball and he runs his routes. That reminds me of Tyler Vaughns, and I've always felt like Tyler Vaughns' ceiling athletically was a little lower than some of the other wide receivers USC has recruited over the years. He's not fast, yet he's not really big. He catches the ball really well. He's a really natural receiver. He high points the ball well. but he's not a 6'4 guy that's physical, that's going to be able to box out good cornerbacks that have decent size, and yet he's not a guy that's going to get a ton of separation with his speed. And something about Troy Franklin reminds me a little bit of Tyler Vaughns in that capacity. The next question comes from Swaggy P, who asks, if Jake Garcia decommits, who would USC recruit to be the second QB in the 2021 class? First, I think we need to chill on the Jake Garcia decommitting talk. It seems at this point the peristyle is almost trying to speak it into existence. I understand there was a narrative there before Miller Moss commit that both of those players would not end up at the same school. And that came from good sources. That has subsequently changed. And while we all have our skepticism and we've followed recruiting long enough to understand that what's said and what's done are two different things in recruiting. I always say actions speak louder than words. And I think that is still true to this day. I still think you have to wait and see how these recruits act in terms of how much are they around a program that they're committed to. How often do they get on campus? Do they go to games? Talk is cheap. But right now, there's no sign that Jake Garcia is going to decommit. And certainly, USC is recruiting both and wants to sign both quarterbacks. They have to. They have to sign two quarterbacks in this class. JT Daniels leaving makes that even more important. So in terms of whether or not and playing the hypotheticals, I think we'll just leave it open-ended at this point. You could look at the target list, the players at quarterback that USC has offered scholarships to. That would be the group of players that they would have to fall back on at the quarterback position if there was a decommitment. Our next question comes from Dodal15, who asks, is there any update on Jalen Smith or Nathaniel Wiggins? Wiggins, the 6'2", 170-pound cornerback out of Atlanta, Georgia, Westlake High School, he doesn't do a lot of interviews, so it's hard to get consistent information on him just in terms of any schools he's going to be narrowing down, any visits that he has penciled in perhaps for the fall. With Jalen Smith, we know that he's very high on USC. The news of Miller Moss transferring to Modern Day is interesting to see how it may impact him. But I still think with Jalen Smith, USC is in really good shape with him. And as I predicted with the last Recruiting Rant podcast, I think there's a good chance that he actually commits to USC this month. The next question is from Down With Disease 92, who asks, from the new support staff members, that's not Claiborne, Chris Claiborne is speaking of, has made the biggest impact in recruiting? That's a tough question to answer only because the staff has been working remotely since March. I would say that Armon Hawkins Jr. was a big hire and he's already made an impact in recruiting. I think an under the radar, very easily overlooked addition to the support staff that was very important was the hiring of Alex Verdugo, the director of graphic design. I think that goes a long ways in terms of social media and brand presence. Keep in mind, Chris Claiborne and Hayes Pollard didn't start officially working for USC until June 1st. So we really don't know what the recruiting impact will be yet for the Trojans. Our next question comes from Alberto Crespi. He says, hi, GM. Regarding cornerback recruiting, USC took no DBs last cycle and currently have no true corners committed. It looks like Davies, Jalen Davies from Modern Day, is Oregon-bound. Wiggins, who we just spoke about, is considering all his options, though leaning towards USC, and you have Sierre Wood listed in your database as being cool towards USC. I believe USC ideally wants to take three corners. How do you see things shaking out at that position? Well, I don't have a crystal ball. I do see USC looking at plan A being Sierre Wright, Jalen Smith from Alamanni as a cornerback, and Nathaniel Wiggins, who we just spoke about in the last question. That, I think, is the first three USC really wants to take. Now, there are other cornerbacks that they have offered. There are other potential options on the board. I think they have a good shot at actually signing all three of those players right now. Wiggins is really the one that may end up being the toughest to sign just because he went from being a three-star to top 247 to right now, I think he's top 100 nationally. So a lot of those SEC schools that may have been overlooking him in February and March may decide to come back around and put the full court press on him as we get later in the year. The next question comes from RSC Schindler, who says, hey GM, I've always wondered why UCLA's offense after the hiring of Chip Kelly looked nothing like the high-octane offense from his Oregon days. Could you please explain in football terms how college football, and specific college football defenses, have evolved over time to make his style of offense obsolete? Or is it that he doesn't have the players to run it? That's a good question, and I'll admit, I'm pretty stunned at how bad UCLA has been under Chip Kelly. It's an uninspired, lethargic group, but I don't think it's the players in terms of fit that are the biggest issue for the offense. I don't think Chip Kelly's running the same offense that he did at Oregon. Now, the question would be why, and I can only give you conjecture and speculation on that, which you're obviously asking me to do. I think part of it is he went to the NFL. Being an offensive-minded coach, a lot of offensive coordinators have big egos, and sometimes it's kind of hard to walk back your scheme. It's hard to have everyone telling you that you're an offensive schematic genius, go to the NFL, see all these complex, convoluted pass offenses and concepts, and then come back to college and install your six-play spread read option offense. In addition to that, the mechanics of that offense, meaning the no-huddle, fast-paced, up-tempo, have not only been augmented by defenses because they've had a decade to understand and watch film on it, but also officiating, because now you have certain rules in place that allow the defense to substitute as the offense substitutes. So I think you've got a combination of two things. First, Chip Kelly outsmarting himself, trying to implement pro-style play concepts into his offense at the college football level within college football parameters, meaning the 20 hours that you get each week to practice, and college football defenses and the game itself evolving around up-tempo, fast-paced offenses. Our next question comes from Sharmack, who asks, if you had to put a percentage on it, how much is Clay involved in recruiting defensive players, or is he leaving that all up to the defensive staff with his blessing? At this point, I'd say, 10%. He's not very involved. He's involved in maybe offering the scholarship, accepting the commitment. He'd be more involved when you get into official visits and you get your in-home visits. That's when the head coach, and specifically a head coach whose lineage is on the offensive side of the ball, gets involved in recruiting. Otherwise, it's all the support staff and the assistant coaches themselves that are the primary recruiters for those specific recruits. The next question comes from C-Change, who says, hi Jim, struggling how to word this question, but let me give it a go. There's been lots of talk about hashtag take back the West and lockdown California. But at the same time, I keep hearing the phrase, quote unquote, USC has other players higher on their board in relation to top 30 Cali guys like Jalen Davies, Christian Dixon, Thomas Cole, Victor Vaca, Devin Kirkland, Ware Hudson, Bo Collins, etc., who either didn't have offers or weren't being pursued hard. So when it comes to the quote-unquote board, how much importance does the staff give to locking down California versus going after out-of-state prospects they like better, like Quay Davis, for example? I feel like the optics are bad letting top-ranked Cali guys go elsewhere, even if we weren't recruiting them that hard. Or is it just things fans worry about, not recruits and coaches? C-Chain says, Big Jim, hold my beer. This is a valid question, though, and I don't know if there's a clear, concise answer for it. I mean, the question itself wasn't concise, so what do you expect from the answer? But Dante Williams sort of coined that phrase, and obviously Dante Williams is recruiting lights out locally. But you have a lot of coaches on the staff that want to recruit Texas because that's where their connections are. I think it is a little bit hypocritical to say take back the West and then go to Texas to try to recruit a bunch of offensive players. So, yeah, you want to be able to cherry pick a great class. Great classes are always going to pepper in some really good out-of-state talent. But, yeah, you do have to build that wall around California, specifically Southern California, and land all those top players. So there are always going to be some players in California and Southern California that leave the state or leave the area because there's too many good players every single cycle for USC to sign all of them. But I think there are some instances, and you named some players there potentially, where you could argue USC's not locking down California and they're not locking down the West and they're going other places to get maybe a guy like Colin Mobley or maybe a guy like Brandon Campbell, who some would argue you could get in the state of California and not have to go outside the state or outside the quote-unquote West. Now, to be fair, there were also some names that you mentioned which either USC did recruit, like Bo Collins, the 6'3", 195-pound four-star wide receiver from St. John Bosco. USC offered him a scholarship, recruited him hard. He was at the top of their board, but committed to Clemson. USC is still recruiting Bo Collins. Then you have other names like Devin Kirkwood. Now, Devin Kirkwood is a local player, a very good player, but USC has three commitments from local players who are better at the safety position, and that's the position that Devin Kirkwood is projected to play. So USC didn't necessarily go out of state there. They're taking back the West. They're locking down California, getting Anthony Beavers, Kalen Bullock, and Zamarian Gordon all committed. Our next question comes from Gate Call, who asks, are there any under-the-radar guys who have the potential to see their stock rise in the second half of 2020? Any guys who could get an offer or extra attention late in the process? There could be a ton of those guys, seeing that there was a very limited camp circuit, no 7-on-7 circuit, no college team camps, and no May evaluations. In terms of specific players to watch for, I think James Bowles out of San Clemente High School, 6'1", 210, 215-pound running back, who had a college body his sophomore year when I first saw him at the Huntington Beach passing tournament, broke his foot, I think, as a sophomore and kind of got lost in the shuffle, but could potentially have a big senior year. And we know USC needs two running backs in this class. And James Bowles, with a little bit of size, would complement a guy like Brandon Campbell at 5'10", 190 pounds pretty well. If plan A doesn't work out for USC at defensive back, specifically cornerback, I think it's a pretty deep year in California for defensive backs. Elijah Lloyd is a player to watch from Mission Hills High School in San Marcos, which is San Diego, basically North County. He's got some really good film, fast player, a guy that runs track. Not the biggest cornerback in the world. He's only about 5'9", 5'10". But you watch his film, he's a pretty dynamic player. And I think someone that, again, if plan A doesn't work out, Jalen Smith, Sierra Wright, Nathaniel Wiggins, maybe they could go after a guy like Elijah Lloyd. Our next question comes from Polly, who asks, so where do we stand with the wide receiver position? Any ideas who might be the third wide receiver? Do you think MJ, Michael Jackson, gets his fourth star? Yes, I do think Michael Jackson gets his fourth star. In terms of where USC stands with the wide receiver position, they've got two commitments. Qu'Darrius Davis is committed. He remains committed. We'll see if he wavers at all during the year. Obviously, being from Texas, and you know he's going to get a lot of attention from the Big 12 schools, maybe even some SEC schools. We'll have to see how that plays out. Michael Jackson just committed. He's solid. As for a third wide receiver in the class, we've talked about this probably every week. You know, they're out with Troy Franklin as it looks, but USC is going to continue to recruit him. They're continuing to recruit Dante Thornton, but it looks like he's leaning towards Oregon, as is Xavier Worthy. Although I think with Xavier Worthy, grades are more of an issue, and I don't know how hard USC has recruited him. So it's not like Thornton and it's not like Franklin, where USC has pushed hard and was all in for Franklin, and Franklin didn't put them in his top four. There are other names that are on the board, other wide receivers that are committed to other schools. Bo Collins is still a wide receiver that USC is recruiting hard. So we'll see how that shakes out with his commitment to Clemson. Our next question comes from Best Lakers Fan. Every time I read that, I want to say Bakersfield Fan for some reason. Best Lakers Fan asked, 180 degree from my question last week, over the past 20 years, in parentheses, excluding the current staff, who were the top five worst recruiters we've had at USC? Would love to have your ranking from 1 to 5, with 1 being the worst. You know, I really don't want to disparage any coaches, whether they're on the current coaching staff or not. I would say this, Clay Helton has probably employed 3 of them. Actually, you know what, I take that back, because I would have thrown John Baxter into that group. But the truth of the matter is, I think John Baxter actually was probably a pretty good recruiter in terms of recruiting kickers and in terms of selling that you needed to have, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 guys on the roster that needed scholarship offers that were specialty players. That took some salesmanship. So I wouldn't say John Baxter actually was a bad recruiter. He didn't recruit well outside of his position. You know, he didn't recruit a lot of tight ends, or he didn't really recruit players, I think, in Central California all that well. But in terms of recruiting kickers and recruiting specialty players, I think he probably did a really fine job. But there have been some other ones, and you know who they are. The coach that was a bad recruiter for Lane Kiffin's staff has gone on and been a pretty decent recruiter at other schools. So I don't know if it was just inexperience or the circumstances, because you have to remember Lane Kiffin's staff, USC was dealing with sanctions. So that's something that you do have to consider. But my biggest issue with that coach was his evaluations. He made some evaluations from an area standpoint, and USC offered and actually signed a couple kids that they had no business signing. So there's been a few bad recruiters, and I think obviously with Clay Helton, they had their worst year recruiting last year, and that doesn't happen unless you have, you know, multiple issues on the staff and people dropping the ball. The next question comes from Trojan 2016, who says, "Love these, GM. Thanks for all you do." Well, I appreciate that. First question, would an 8-4 or 7-5 season followed by an Urban Meyer hiring lead to a top 5 recruiting class? Definitely. I think looking at the class that they have now, and even if at some point during the season you had some of those commits waiver, if you swoop in with Urban Meyer in early November, you're going to get a bunch of guys. There's just going to be a lot of hype and excitement around the program, bringing in a coach like that. It would be a coup for USC recruiting. His other question is, did Oregon pay Kayvon Thibodeau? And if so, how much? I don't know. I don't have any receipts. You have to talk to the NCAA and the NCAA enforcement staff about that one. Sorry, no insight there. Our next question comes from Mayanki. Mayanki, one of the oldest mods and wisest mods of the peristyle. He asked, what am I missing on Thomas Cole? Huge position of need, good frame, odd top 5. Was he not coveted by our staff? Short arms, stiff hips. Yeah, USC's just not interested. They haven't offered him a scholarship. They haven't been in contact with him. I don't know what it is specifically about him athletically they don't like, but they have not recruited him. Now, that could change down the line, but I think the fact that we don't have any summer camps makes it less likely, because they're not going to get an in-person evaluation unless they send Tim Drevno or someone up to see him specifically during the season, which could happen. But USC hasn't done that much during the season where they've actually gone out and they've tried to evaluate recruits that they have not offered scholarships to. Usually those evaluations during the season are for players that they've already offered and they're really just double checking on, or they've offered and they want to recruit and they want to make that statement, hey, we're coming all the way out to your high school football game. This is part of how much we want you. So it's not necessarily a period where you're going out there and you're trying to find new players to offer. So with Thomas Cole, yeah, it seems like maybe that ship has sailed. The next question is from Essie Maid. GM, you're the man. I am a man. What recruits who SC is recruiting hard will wait till the early signing period to announce? Corey Foreman, JT Tuimoloau, Kingsley Suamataia, Nate Wiggins, Tristan Lee. I don't think USC is going to dictate that. I think that's going to be dictated by the recruits themselves and whether any of them want to wait. With the uncertainty, a lot of kids want to commit now and get their foot in the door with the class. Will Corey Foreman wait all the way to the early signing period before he makes another commitment? I kind of don't think so. It's possible, but I kind of don't think so. And I just don't know with any of those guys if they're going to actually wait till December to make an announcement on a verbal commitment. The next question is from South Coast Trojan, who says, this is a bit lengthy, so I apologize, but it will make sense. Don't make promises you can't keep, South Coast Trojan. Rumors, true or not, have started about Davis, Rayshon Davis, possibly decommitting from LSU, and if he did, USC would be in a good spot to land him. Recently, Jalen Davies, cornerback from Modern Day, has been crystal balled to Oregon and was not a top priority for USC. News from the War Room recently stated that Davies and Davis would like to play together, and to watch out for Oregon if Davis decommitted from LSU. Knowing that, and in all likelihood USC having more than 25 rides this cycle, wouldn't it benefit USC to recruit Davies to increase its chances with Davis if he should decommit from LSU? Well, the obvious answer to this question is you don't want to recruit one player because of another. You want to recruit each player that you have in a class, whether it's 25 or 28 recruits in a class, on their own individual merits. Now, Jalen Davies is not a player that USC didn't recruit. It's not like USC looked at him like Thomas Cole, who they haven't offered a scholarship and they really haven't been in contact with. Jalen Davies was a guy that USC was very involved with early on. It just seems like USC has other priority recruits at the cornerback position. There's some gamble that goes on here. USC obviously feels very confident with Sierra Wright, and they have to feel confident with Nathaniel Wiggins and maybe some other players if Jalen Davies is not a guy that they're going to go on. And remember, USC also offered Darius McGahee, who's a 6'1", 160-pound four-star cornerback from Pensacola, Florida, not too long ago. So they definitely seem like they're just going to go in a different direction away from Jalen Davies, and they don't feel like that is going to impact their chances with Rashawn Davis. The next question comes from SCPA5, who asks about backup cornerbacks, which we've touched on already. His second question is, has USC had any interest in Jalen Weaver? Jalen Weaver, the 6'8", 270-pound defensive end from Antioch, California, three-star ranked the number 55 weak side defensive end in the 2021 class. From what I understand academically, Jalen Weaver has a long ways to go, and that's why you see some initial interest from schools like Arkansas, Tennessee, Nebraska, but not many Pac-12 schools on his offer list. You put on his film and you see immediately that kid's a player. I mean, that kid's got some size. He's got some explosiveness. He definitely has a lot of talent, but he has a lot of work to do in the classroom, and that's why you're not seeing a lot of Pac-12 schools involved in his recruitment. The next question comes from David Law, who asks, GM, can you talk to us generally about where recruiting studs like yourself get your inside scoop? Do you get more information from A, SC sources, B, the kids and their families, or C, others? When somebody asks you about your sources, you always go with others, C. David Law slides in with another question, a second question. Do either or both Moss and Garcia, Miller Moss, Jake Garcia, remind you of any SC quarterbacks of the past, parentheses Kessler, Slovis, or of other Pac-12 quarterbacks? Ironically, I think Miller Moss sort of reminds me of Jimmy Clausen, which is ironic because his coach at Alamany was Casey Clausen. But I see some similarities between how Miller plays and his ability to absorb, I think, schematics, decision-making, his follow-through, his release. I see some similarities there. Not necessarily, you know, an exact match, but I do see some comparisons with him and actually Jimmy Clausen when Jimmy Clausen was coming out of Oaks Christian High School. Obviously, Jimmy Clausen had even more clout and even more hype around him coming out of high school, but I think a lot of that also had to do with his name, because you had Rick and you had Casey already come out of high school and go on to college. And, you know, everybody talked about the youngest, Jimmy's going to be the best. So I think that had a lot to do with it, whereas Miller Moss hasn't had two brothers that have gone through college. As for Jake Garcia, off the top of my head, I could see a little bit of Cody Kessler in his game athletically inside the pocket, moving outside the pocket. But then in terms of his arm and in terms of where he wants to go with the football, probably a little bit of Mark Sanchez. He definitely takes more chances than Cody Kessler. Cody Kessler was the check down king, and Cody Kessler just didn't have a great arm. Cody Kessler managing to stay in the NFL as long as he did really surprised me, because his arm strength was not great. And I think Jake Garcia definitely has a better arm. So in terms of that, I would compare him more with a Mark Sanchez. Not as good an arm, I think, as Sanchez coming out of high school, but similar in that league. And then athletically, I think he does move around a bit better, and I would compare him more to maybe a Cody Kessler inside the pocket and then moving outside the pocket. Our next question comes from Best Coast Football, who asked, out of the offensive line currently committed, who do you believe has the most to gain out of their senior season? Meaning, who do you think stock will rise the most? That's actually a really, really good question, because USC has three offensive line commits that all stand to improve not only in the rankings, but just in generally as players this year. Mason Murphy, the 6'5", 290-pound offensive tackle from San Juan Capistrano, J. Sarah High School. Maximus Gibbs, the 6'6", 360-pound offensive guard from Bellflower, St. John Bosco High School. And Saya Mapakaitolo, who's a 6'5", 285-pound offensive tackle from Bishop Alemany High School. All of them have raw attributes, and there are factors in their game, whether it be just physically, footwork, technique, they all could definitely improve. I think with Gibbs, the obvious improvement is, can he drop enough weight to where he can improve his footwork, he can improve his quickness, his punch off the line? If he could show up at, let's say, 325, 330 pounds for his senior season, I think that would be a huge boost to his athleticism. And you could see him skyrocket up the rankings because of his potential. With Mason Murphy, I think you have a somewhat underdeveloped talent, a young player that has a lot of physical tools that he can continue to improve on. I think just natural strength is something that you're going to see Mason Murphy improve upon and get better as a player. And so I think he has upside in that regard. And then Mapakaitolo is pretty raw and a player that's really just sort of kind of coming into his own. There's potential with him playing left tackle that he gets to put on some weight. And again, it's a matter of physicality. Can he go from being a guy that's, you know, 280 pounds and he looks like he's carrying 255 to being a guy that's closer to 300 pounds and he's actually able to move people off the ball even easier? Who has the potential to move up the rankings the most? I think the obvious choice would be Gibbs, just because if he loses the weight, shows improved athleticism, and can lock down the starting spot at St. John Bosco his whole senior season, he's going to move up the rankings. He's only one spot below Mason Murphy right now. And you have to remember, at 360 pounds, he was only a part-time starter most of his junior season. Now, in terms of exposure, I like Mapakaitolo because that's a guy we just haven't really seen much in person. He came over from Arizona, played at Alemany last year, but didn't go to the camp circuit, wasn't at any USC camps. So we just haven't seen much of him, and he could be a guy that really just impresses people a lot if we get to see him more in person during his senior season. Our next question comes from Jaguilera 0015, who says, "Hi, Jim. I always love listening to what you have to say, and I'm glad you went solo. I always knew that you were the Beyonce of the group." Well, I appreciate that. I'm not sure the other staff members will appreciate that, but I appreciate that. My question is this. Is there still talk about a potential DB transfer? And if so, when should we expect this to happen? If you're talking about the DB transfer that I hinted about a couple episodes ago, I don't know that that's going to happen. It really was predicated on the immediate eligibility waiver that the NCAA was dangling out there for players. Perhaps that happens next season. It happens spring 2021. That could potentially lead to a transfer. But if it doesn't happen, then I don't know that that particular player would be transferring from the school he's already at. The next question comes from Ali, or Ali for USC. Any word on the grad transfer O-liner from Houston? Jared Williams announced over the weekend that he would be transferring to Miami. Our next question comes from BU for USC, who asked, is Nathaniel Wiggins the type of special talent that could play both ways like Adoree Jackson did? He could play both ways, but I think he's projected to be a cornerback. I think that's far and away his best position, and you wouldn't necessarily want to water down his talent by trying to play him both ways. And certainly at the high school level, there's less question about which side of the ball he's going to play on. I think with Wiggins, most agree that cornerback is his best position. Our next question comes from Big Jim Trojan, who says, hey Gerard, it is I, once more, the Prince of Verbosity. I don't know if that's verbosity or verbosity. I know when you say you're verbose, that means you have a lot to say, but I think it's pronounced verbosity. Anyhow, I don't know why, but I've been fixated on the topic of tight ends, parentheses football ones, of course, recently. We're bringing in Jack Yari and Lake McCree, and we still have Josh Fallow, Daniel Imator-Bebe, Ethan Ray, Eric Cromenhoek, etc. For the future of both the success of the team and the recruiting dependent on the field production, do you see USC getting tight ends more involved in passing plays in Harrell's offense? I think USC has to involve the tight end more, not only because you continue to recruit tight ends, but you made John David Baker a full-time tight ends coach. So to me, that signals, yes, we want to have tight ends not only a part of the offense in general, but we want to have them a part of the passing offense. And it's not like they didn't use the tight end. Eric Cromenhoek played a bunch of snaps last season. It's just a matter they didn't target the tight ends in the passing game. And yes, I understand that the coaching staff has talked about Drake London as a pseudo tight end, but in reality, he's a receiver and probably won't have that physicality and that ability to be a true tight end until he maybe graduates and ends up going to the NFL. I could see in the draft people looking at him as a potential tight end prospect, but that's going to be after he matures, he bulks up, he gains weight, and he gains strength. Big Jim throws in a bonus question, as usual. Jack Yari, do you predict him ending up on the offensive line? Not initially, but I think by his junior season, I could see it potentially happening, especially if you have a coaching change and you have a new assistant staff come in and they basically look at who their top players are, who can contribute where, new scheme, no promises made to any recruits. They can come in pretty much clean slate and just put players where they want to put players. Now, you obviously open yourself up to some potential transfers, but at that point, if Jack Yari is hovering around that 270-pound range and they feel like ultimately you could be a first-round pick if you are an offensive tackle and we can get 25 more pounds on you, then he's probably going to do that. You know, if he's a fledgling tight end and USC hasn't really been able to get him the ball, they haven't been able to feature that position in general within the offense, yeah, he's going to be looking at potentially going to the NFL versus, you know, just getting a 9-to-5 job after college. The next question comes from TrojanMan11. He asks, GM, Greg Biggins, national recruiting writer for 24/7 Sports, posted on many sites today about making the top five for Corey Foreman. GB mentioned that LSU and UGA are top two or three, but didn't post the same for USC. Will winning on the field be enough to land him, or do we need to land other recruits in addition? I do think if USC can win 10 or 11 games next season, they'll get Corey Foreman, and they'll get a lot of other good recruits. So it's kind of either way, they're going to get a good class, and they're going to get Corey Foreman if they win a bunch of games next season. And Corey Foreman has pretty much said that. He's been pretty open about wanting to see the new defense, wanting to see some development, specifically the development of Drake Jackson within that new defense. And I think he just wants to see USC win some big games. We've made it to the second page of the thread, so the finish line is now in sight. Mix, with our next question, says, love the work you're doing, Gerard. Thank you. Well, you're very welcome. Just to add my 2 cents in the best recruit video by a USC recruit since you've been doing this job, agree 100% on Byers, Jeff Byers, former center at USC. It's almost comical how dominant those highlights were. I highly recommend looking those up. Besides him, I would add Devon Kennard and Everson Griffith. Unless those videos were sped up, those two were just flat out scary in their highlights. Their speed was incredible. I'd say specifically Everson Griffith, 6'3", 265 pounds, almost 270 pounds, played running back and was a pretty good running back his junior year for Avondale. He was a freak athlete. He's a guy that ran high 4.5s, low 4.6s, legitimately everywhere he went. Mix's question is, if USC just happened to hire a legitimate big-time head coach after this season ended, shade at Clay Helton here, could you see T. Martin ever coming back to USC, especially considering his wife supposedly loved living here? Thanks again for always keeping it quote-unquote real. I think it's possible, but there would have to be some bridges mended because there were some bridges burned when he left. Not necessarily scorched, but charred. And I think there would have to be some conversations, not really with the current coaching staff, because obviously they would probably be gone, I think, under those circumstances. It would be more with administrators, maybe boosters around the football program. But T loves Southern California. His family loves Southern California. I think his feelings were hurt when he offered to take a demotion and just be a receivers coach and not the offensive coordinator, but still was fired. That created some ill will. and it wasn't necessarily a clean break. So coming back, there would have to be some conversations. And like I said, some bridges mended. And perhaps, maybe in the future, there's a possibility that happens. The next question is from 34 Jump Cut. GM, your ultimate road trip album. The one that has to be there when you travel. That really changes from trip to trip, just depending on what I'm listening to. Right now, I'm listening to the Black Dahlia Murder's Verminous album, which I think is fantastic. They've put out a ton of great albums. They're a very consistent band. If you like death metal, definitely check them out. As far as iPod mainstays go, GZA, Liquid Swords, always a bunch of songs from that album on my iPod. Metallica, Injustice for All, Seasons of the Abyss from Slayer, Opeth, the Orchid album. I have quite a few songs on there that stay on the iPod. Holy Wars and Tornado of Souls from Megadeth's Rust in Peace album is always on my iPod. Savikas, Flamenco on Fire is another one. And I think I've got a few songs from Between the Buried and Me, their Silent Circus album. I think Mordecai's on there. I've got a few songs, but that's kind of sort of the mainstay songs that I never really delete off the iPod. The next question comes from OCSJ Trojan Fan, who asks, who are the other LBs we are recruiting besides Calvert who are high on us? Who is going to be the third wide receiver recruit now? Keep doing your thing, G-Mart. Receiver we've covered ad nauseum in this podcast. For linebacker, Ethan Calvert is really one of the only linebackers that USC is seriously recruiting that has high interest in the Trojans. It's a pretty short list. Unless you're going to add Corey Foreman to the list, which I kind of did this month. I threatened it during the podcast last week. Corey Foreman is now listed as a hybrid rusher in the target list as a potential jack or B-backer linebacker for USC. But other than Foreman and Calvert, there really aren't too many other linebackers that USC is seriously pursuing right now. And I think that tells you a little bit about the confidence level the coaching staff has in recruiting those two players. Our next question comes from Super Trojan 5, who asks, best high school player you have seen as a fan and covered as a recruiting analyst? I'm going to throw a curveball at you. Chris Claiborne. I played against him when he was at North High School in Riverside. I watched him as a fan when he was at USC, and I covered him when he was a coach at Calabasas. Boom, didn't see that one coming, did you? Super Trojan also asked a question about Ultimate 7-on-7 teams and what our 7-on-7 team composed of USCfootball.com staff members would look like. Well, the problem there is we only have 6 full-time staff members, so we'd be short one of a 7-on-7 team. Gate Call is back for a second question, second page. He knows the rules. If you have to decide, what intro music would you play as the Trojans walk down the tunnel? That's a tough question to answer because there's a lot of songs that you could argue would be great intro songs. I would stay away from contemporary songs and go with something more classical, something pretty heavy. I love the Ecstasy of Gold, the song from The Good, Bad, and the Ugly. But Metallica uses that as their intro song to concerts. So to go with something original, I've always liked Berlioz' Dream of a Witch's Sabbath. Next question is from Lovealot1, who asks, are there any top O-lineman recruits in our future? And why is it that we seem to only recruit 3-star linemen? Well, at the moment, the top offensive tackle in California is a 3-star lineman. That's Mason Murphy, who's committed to USC. So stars can be a bit deceiving in that regard. I think USC has a chance at getting some linemen that are 4-stars. Obviously, Josh Simmons, who we talked about a lot last week on the podcast, the 6'5", 330-pound offensive guard prospects from Helix High School is one of the top players on USC's board. USC is still recruiting Kingsley Suamataia from Orem High School up there in Utah. So there are some players that they are involved with. Who's in their future? Well, I don't have a crystal ball. I can't tell you exactly. But I think out of that group, certainly Simmons is the highest rated. And I think potentially, as we talked about earlier on this podcast, one of those linemen that's committed to USC that's a three-star right now has the potential of being a four-star at the end of the year. The next question comes from Jacob Stein, who asks, are there any quarterback possibilities in the porthole to even just help out with the scout team? The porthole. I think if USC has a quarterback prospect come in as a transfer, it's probably not a quarterback that would be in the portal right now. That's my guess. His second question is, lastly, from the 2020 recruits we signed, besides Gary Bryant Jr., do you anticipate having any significant impact on this current season coming up? I think Kobe Pepe, the three-star defensive tackle from St. John Bosco, could contribute. How much of an impact? I don't think he's going to push the starters, but I think he could come in and contribute, get some tackles. I think USC is going to have to play some of those linemen. Now, whether they make a positive impact or not remains to be seen. I think Jonah Monheim is definitely a player in the future that will contribute for USC and be a good player for USC. Whether he's going to be that guy next year is hard to say. It's hard for offensive linemen to come in immediately and make a positive impact on the team, which is to say they can compete legitimately for a starting job. I think if USC has one of those freshman offensive tackles legitimately competing for one of those starting jobs, either that shows you how bad the offensive line for USC is, and that will work itself out during the season, or one of those guys is a phenom and was grossly overlooked by the recruiting publications. I think you'll see one of those freshmen come in, play some right tackle, contribute, probably rotate in with a player like maybe an Andrew Voorhees. But USC is going to have to find, especially in the first handful of games of the season, a player that's already on the roster to play left tackle and right tackle, and then try to ease in one of those freshmen. And like I said, they rotate in, they take their bumps, but they get some good experience, and they contribute as the season goes on. JD from DC asks our next question. He says, GM, who is the most underrated player in the 2020 class and the most underrated commit in the 2021 class? Parentheses, Slovis was obviously the 2019 guy. I think the most underrated player in the 2020 class was Jonah Monheim, the three-star offensive guard from Moorpark High School. And we talked a little bit about that, I think, last week, why I think he was maybe underrated by the recruiting publications. I think in the 2021 class, right now, probably Michael Jackson, the three-star wide receiver committed out of Desert Pines High School. I think he's going to be a four-star probably sooner rather than later. The next question comes from Trojan Tito, who asks, how serious is defensive lineman Damon Payne looking at USC? Is USC outside looking in, or is USC possibly maybe a top five school for him? Right now, he says USC is top five, and there's a good chance USC gets an official visit from Damon Payne. The funny thing about his recruitment is that we had a conversation on the Peristyle about USC and their lack of success recruiting defensive tackles in the South. Now, the funny thing is, Damon Payne's not from the South. He's actually from Michigan, but nobody picked up on that. And it's a little different. I think going in the Midwest is a little different for USC than going down South and recruiting a defensive tackle. It's still going to be difficult. It's still an uphill battle. And the win-to-loss ratio in recruiting battles going outside the state for defensive tackles is still pretty low. But in this case, USC has a shot at an official visit. And if they can get him there in December, you know, when it's 0 degrees in Michigan, there's potential that maybe they can make a move there and could steal them late in the process. Best Coast Football slides in with another question. In regards to USC recruiting, at this point, what position group are you concerned about the most, and what position group are you concerned about the least? Thanks, GM. I'd be concerned about running back, maybe offensive line recruiting as well, because you're looking for that franchise tackle to replace Austin Jackson, and it's going to be tough. If they don't get Kingsley Suamataia, I don't know if that guy exists for USC out there. The least concerned, probably defensive back, quarterback. Obviously, you've got two top 10 quarterbacks committed, so don't have to worry about quarterbacks. But I think the defensive back position will play out favorably for USC. Even if they don't get their plan A, like I said, I think defensive back is a very deep position in Southern California this year. Our next question is from Son of a Mitch. I always love saying Son of a Mitch. Latrell Neville, just decommitted from Virginia Tech. Is he a guy we go after to fill that third wide receiver spot? Latrell Neville, a 6'3", 195-pound three-star wide receiver from Missouri City, Texas. I haven't heard too much about USC recruiting him. Didn't really hear much about USC recruiting him before he committed to Virginia Tech, and I haven't heard much since. So I think USC has other players that are ranked ahead of him. And at this point, USC has to have some amount of confidence with the guys that they've offered scholarships to at the position because they have not offered any additional scholarships recently. The next question comes from Chris Trevino. You've spoken with thousands of prospects and recruits over your career, I guess. Off the top of your head, who would be some of the most well-spoken and thoughtful kids you've ever interviewed? Top five? I don't know if it's like this covering other schools, but USC's had quite a few recruiting targets and commits that have come through over the years that have been great to talk to in terms of their articulation about their journey through the recruiting process. And it's not really just about who's articulate, because a lot of quarterbacks get rehearsed. They have canned answers. No matter what you're going to ask them, you're going to sort of get a canned answer. And while it's very articulate, it's been rehearsed so much that you wouldn't expect otherwise. But then you get kids like Miller Moss. I mean, Miller Moss was one of the very few recruits that you could put on our live show. And he's going to get questions just from the posters and the people that follow the live show. And you don't know what they're going to ask. So it's kind of hard to have canned rehearsed answers. I'm sure he's talked about his recruitment enough that there are just certain things that he knows right off the top of his head how he's going to answer them. But I think with him, he really tries to give you some sincere, honest insight into his recruitment. And I think you saw that in the live show. And certainly I've seen that in a lot of interviews. Talanoa Hufanga is another one that I think is genuinely trying to give you some insight when you ask him a question. Bryce Young was a very good interview. Chris Hawkins was excellent when he was coming out of high school. He did a really good job giving you insight and actually talking to you about the position and football. He was really good talking about football. That's when his eyes would light up, when you'd ask him about playing the safety position and the X's and O's and the things that, you know, are sort of the intangibles that he brought to the table. And he was really good at articulating that. Zach Banner was fantastic. Zach Banner, I thought, you know, when I talked to him at the Army All-American Bowl, I said, man, you could be the next president. Like, not the next president, but you could be a president later down the line, because he has this way about him that would be a great ambassador. And he's very, again, sincere in what he says and articulate in how he says it. Kyle Moore was a very honest guy. One of the first recruits that silently committed to me, that told me he was going to USC before he was going to publicly announce. I think he committed to USC during the Orange Bowl when they blew out Oklahoma. And being from Georgia, you know, he had a lot of pressure from SEC schools still trying to recruit him, but he kind of told me on the low, hey, by the way, you know, I actually did commit to USC. And he was always just a really good, warm-hearted kid that was always very honest about recruiting with me. And Devon Kennard is another kid. I know we talked about him earlier in the podcast, but that's another very smart, articulate, an insightful young man that always left you feeling like you learned something about him after you spoke to him. The next question is from BND1, who says, GM, Karin Ware Hudson, your evaluation of him. Does USC have any interest? Wouldn't seem so from your target list. And if so, any chance he flips from Oregon, a school that, despite wanting to emphasize the run game, having really never been a developer of wide receivers, having had only two drafted in the last 13 years, Dylan Mitchell and Josh Huff, neither of whom did anything in the league, seems to be on every wide receiver west of the Mississippi and some back east also. Thanks. Holy cow. Okay. Let me catch my breath here. You trolled me with all those commas. The answer to the question is no. USC really had no interest in recruiting Karin Ware Hudson before he committed to Oregon. I haven't heard anything about USC recruiting him since then. So the answer to that question is no. Why? I don't know. I can't speak for the coaching staff on their evaluations, but they had other guys rated higher on their board. The next question comes from Vegas guy Paul, who asked, Gerard, now that Cali is gradually opening up from the virus shutdown, can you speculate on what events or activities are scheduled this summer that will aid the evaluation of high school prospects in our recruiting backyard? Thanks, Paul in Vegas. While the state may be gradually opening up, the NCAA still has recruiting in a dead period all the way to the end of July. So the only event that I could see being a recruiting event. It wouldn't involve any evaluations. It would just be the quasi barbecue that they have right before fall camp. That would be the only thing I could see perhaps happening before the start of the season. So that would just be a bunch of unofficial visits, bringing kids down, having them hang out, talk with the new coaches, and that would help recruiting. But obviously, it wouldn't necessarily be much of an evaluation other than just eyeballing kids in street clothes. Our final question this week comes from Fold My Shorts. Hi, Gerard. How many more support staff, in parentheses, and what positions do you think USC will hire before the start of the new season? Do you think that a nutritionist is important to have on the staff? I do think a nutritionist is very important to have on the staff, and I believe USC has one. In terms of additional support staff members, there should be one still coming. I can't really speak to what position they will be involved with. It'll be another analyst position from what I understand. It may be a little unique, but it's still going to basically fulfill that role. I believe USC is also still looking for a director of marketing, if you consider that a support staff role. It is a support staff role, certainly from the standpoint of social media and helping with the video hires that they've made and the graphic design hires that they made. It kind of all comes together with a director of marketing. So I believe that spot is still vacant as well. So more or less two positions yet to be filled in the support staff for USC. That's going to do it for this week's Recruiting Rant podcast. I'm your host, Gerard Martinez. You can follow me on Twitter at GMartLive, or if you have any follow-up questions, you can always reach me on the Peristyle. Stay tuned to USCFootball.com for the best coverage of USC sports and recruiting.